And welcome back to the Sean Green Show. I'm Sean Green. I want to thank everybody out there for listening. Make sure you go to the SeanGreenShow.com. Make sure you check out that page. Every interview is up there. Make sure you check out the YouTube page. And make sure you check out the Facebook page. We're also there too. And follow me on Twitter. You'll get everything there. Trust me. On the Super Celebrity Hotline right now, Ray Carcillo, the review editor at Electronic Gaming Monthly, is on the Super Celebrity Hotline right now. He's standing by. He can't wait to get to us to talk about video games and everything that's happening in the video game world. But one thing I definitely wanted to talk to you about first was that Nintendo was announcing that they was going to refocus everything towards its hardcore gamers. Now, why do you think they're doing this?
Well, I think, you know, this came out from a Shigeru Miyamoto interview. He was surprisingly candid for once. He's usually very reserved with his comments, but I think what is happening is, at least through his eyes and what Nintendo is starting to see now, is that with the Wii and the DS, they expanded the gaming audience, right? They helped usher in the age of casual gamers and new gamers and new generations of gamers. Which is then now, that baton has been picked up by the mobile gaming circuit and whatnot. So what Nintendo wants to do now is to turn those casual gamers that they brought in with Wii and the DS, and they feel that the best way to succeed is to turn those casual gamers into hardcore gamers, and to help them evolve. And by expanding then the hardcore gamer audience, they will also appeal to the already existing hardcore gamer audience, which is, of course, from Nintendo. We want to see all the classic franchises. We want to see Mario, we want to see Zelda, we want to see Starbucks, but we also want to see new things from them, new things that only Nintendo could dream up and do, and take advantage of the Wii U gamepad and technology. I know Splatoon, that they announced at E3, actually looks like a very charming and interesting third-person shooter. So I know that's just the beginning of what they hope will start to appeal to, help bringing that casual audience and helping them evolve into a mature audience, while also appealing to that hardcore audience that may have not necessarily abandoned Nintendo, but definitely taken a step away from what they were. Because let's be honest, the hardcore gamer spends probably a lot more money than the casual gamer, unless they get sucked into some free-to-play scheme.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I'm only speaking from experience, is, you know, with my kids, when they were younger, the first thing I got them were, you know, a Wii, you know, or a Nintendo DS, you know, and then as they progress, they flipped over to, you know, Sony or, you know, the Xbox. And when I think of Wii, and even the Nintendo DS, I'm thinking, you know, that's the soccer mom that, you know, she probably doesn't want to go to the gym and go work out, but she'll get the Wii Fit and work out on the Wii Fit or something like that. So I never really thought of Nintendo, the Wii system, in particularly, as a mainstream game. I mean, that's not how I really looked at it. I just looked at it as something you started out on. You started your way with the Wii, and then you worked yourself up to your PlayStations and your Xboxes.
You know, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. I think what they're realizing is that, you know, when I was a kid, you know, you kind of drew your lines in the sand with a group, right? Like, you were a Nintendo kid, or you were a Sega kid, or then you later became a Sony kid later on. You know, now, between generations, people are a lot more willing to trade off, go from Xbox to PlayStation, go from Nintendo to Xbox, go from, you know, Nintendo to PlayStation or whatever. So I think what they've realized is that the people they drew in with the Wii are not sticking around for the Wii U. Like you said, your kids, they've evolved and grown as gamers, and they want more mature games, and so they're going to the other systems. Nintendo realizes now that they've lost some of those, a lot of that casuals that they brought in, and either the casuals are staying casual, like the soccer moms you mentioned, and not really putting in the gaming time or money that they need, or they're evolving and moving on to other consoles. And what Nintendo needs to do then in turn is to not only help that evolution process, in turn casual gamers into hardcore gamers, but they need to do it on their system. And I think they realize that if they don't do that, they are, and even with the Wii U's semi-resurgence due to Mario Kart and a few other games that have recently come out, they're in trouble.
Do you think they'll win? Do you think this is something possible that they can actually win with them, you know, spending that much time away from the hardcore gamers? Do you think that's actually a winnable battle?
I don't know if it's necessarily winnable. I think they can make ground back up. They have a very strong lineup over the next 15 months. If they hit all their release dates for the 3DS, and too with, you know, announcing a new 3DS system, I mean, that's part of the reason why they announced this brand new piece of hardware at PAX over this past weekend, is to try and help bring in, you know, hardcore gamers who didn't get on the 3DS bandwagon 3 years ago. They're trying to adapt to the market and trying to, I don't think they'll win. I don't think that, but I do think they can make up some of the ground they lost. Definitely not all, but they can make up a little bit, because they have a huge, you know, next 15 months between Hyrule Warriors, Bayonetta, we got a new Star Fox next year, Splatoon, we're supposed to get the new Legend of Zelda next holiday, we got Smash Brothers on 3DS and Wii U. They have a very strong lineup that's planned over the next 15 months, especially exclusives. So they could definitely make up some ground. The problem is, like you said, the damage has already really been done, and so I definitely don't think they'll win this console generation. I think it's a two-horse race. But I think that they can at least make up the ground to where we're not talking about Nintendo going the way of Sony and suddenly just becoming a software provider and stop making hardware.
Great. And you mentioned PAX, by the way. Do you think that Nintendo was the winner at PAX?
I think they're one of the winners. I think the announcement of the new 3DS, now with a new C button that allows for for twin stick shooters and whatnot, and for more, I guess, hardcore games, I think was a big deal. Announcing that was definitely something that they needed, and it's not the first time that Nintendo has iterated, of course, basically on the same technology on the same hardware generation. I definitely think they had a very strong lineup there. I think they were one of the winners, but I think when you think of PAX, the big winners are usually like the indies. You know, it's always a great show to showcase a lot of indie games. You got the Indie Mega Booth there. And so, you know, if you're an indie developer, PAX is a really big show for you. And I think the Indie Mega Booth had a really great year this year. So I think the indies were winners as well. You know, so I mean, 2K also had a very nice showing. You know, Ubisoft always has a very nice show. You know, they, of course, showed up the crew. They had Assassin's Creed, Unity, and Rogue there. 2K, of course, had Evolve again, and Borderlands, which they let people for the first time play as Claptrap on the PAX floor for the new Borderlands, the pre-sequel. So I think, you know, there's definitely a lot more good than bad. I mean, even Sony, I think Sony still has probably one of the weaker showings, just because their lineup isn't as exciting in terms of exclusive stuff for a while. But even they had showed off The Order 1886. You know, I would probably say Sony is probably one of the weaker displays there.
Okay, great. And for months, we've spoken about Assassin's Creed Unity, and Unity would be a next-gen console exclusive. Now, for the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360, Assassin's Creed Rogue would be released the same day as Unity. Can you tell me a little bit about Assassin's Creed Rogue?
Well, Rogue is interesting because it's taking things that you learned and saw in Assassin's Creed 3 and Assassin's Creed 4 and kind of continuing them. Not really building on them per se, but definitely continuing them, and it's definitely more of the Assassin's Creed gameplay you're used to. It's not iterating that much, but very much similar to the start of AC3, this entire game you're playing as a Templar, including sometimes meeting up with Haytham Kenway. You're a young Templar agent, you know, trying to undermine the assassins, and then, of course, basically still doing with the ship mechanics that were taken in Black Flag. You're sailing around the North Atlantic. The game takes place in and around New York City, New York Harbor, the North Atlantic, a little bit of the wilderness that I'm sure people from AC3 will also. It's not quite as expansive as AC3's wilderness. Most of the action takes place in and around New York and in the open water, but you'll obviously see elements from those two past games really show up and make their mark here in Rogue. And I think it's going to be interesting to see a full game devoted to the other side of the coin. You know, we've had a little bit of the Templar point of view over the past couple of recent games, but this one is just the Templars. It's just their main focus. So you get to see how the bad guys think in Assassin's Creed Rogue.
Okay, one more question about that game. Is it tied in with Unity in any way? Since they're
both Rogue and Unity are two completely separate adventures. I mean, everything in Assassin's Creed is somehow tied to the great, you know, Assassins versus Templar War. There may be some loose connection, but in terms of anything directly affecting one or the other, the stories are completely different.
Okay, great. Let's move on to Dark Souls, the DLC, Crown of the Old Iron King. Compared to the first DLC, Crown of the Sunken King, it was all about exploration. What does Crown of the Old Iron King, what does that center around?
Well, definitely the map and the world here is much smaller than what you saw in Sunken King. I think Old Iron King, though, makes up for it with action. There's a lot more action here, and I think the gameplay and combat were really focused on more heavily in this DLC, and it still told a really interesting story. It's only about probably a 5-hour experience, I'd say, and the enemies honestly aren't as hard as you're used to, but they make up for it by throwing more of them at you, which even that in and of itself is a little bit of a twist on what you typically get from Dark Souls. So I think that in terms of the exploration, I think exploration was definitely not the focus here. It was it's a smaller map. It's not nearly as vibrant or as lively a map that you're exploring, but there's definitely a story here in exploring the tower that it takes place in. I think will give Dark Souls fans a special thrill in its own right.
Okay, great. And lastly, let's move on to Infamous First Light. One of the cornerstones of Infamous Second Son was the good and bad karma paths. Are those available in First Light?
No, there is no karma path in First Light. You're playing as Fetch, Abigail Walker, who of course gave Delson the neon powers in the main game, Second Son. And for this, whatever Fetch does, there's no good or bad. It's just Fetch being Fetch. So headshot or leg shot, doesn't matter. It's your choice. It actually encourages you to do headshots some of the time, instantly incapacitate some of the enemies you face. So in that regard, the karma meter has been thrown out the window. You don't have to worry about it. It's just Fetch being Fetch and running around in a pink blaze of glory.
Oh, wow. And one thing I want to ask about that, I knew it's been a while. Everybody was waiting for this DLC. How come it took so long for it to come out?
Well, I think that they were trying to iterate on making sure that Fetch's powers felt different enough from Delson so that you still felt a different experience. And I think they did actually a really good job of that. Even though you play as Neon in Second Son, Fetch's Neon powers are very different from, I wouldn't say very different, but different enough from Delson that she feels like her own character, feels unique enough, and there's enough to explore there that you still feel like a wholly new character, even though you've had the power set before. Unfortunately, I think, much like the Karma Meter, I think they still could have used a little bit more work in expanding on her story and really making you care about the characters that you meet in her mini-adventure. And, of course, this is basically a direct prequel to the events that lead up to the beginning of Second Son. I think that would have been, I think they could have spent a little bit more time on that. But overall, I think it was a solid DLC. And I think they wanted to make sure that Fetch, at least in terms of gameplay, felt different from Delson.
And there you have it, Ray Carcillo, review editor at Electronic Gaming Monthly, EGMNow.com, RayCarcillo.com. You can also follow Ray on Twitter at Ray Carcillo, and you can also follow him on Facebook. Make sure you check him out. Definitely check out RayCarcillo.com. A lot of interesting articles. If you're a true hardcore gamer, go to RayCarcillo.com. I promise you will not be disappointed when you go to RayCarcillo.com. Ray, thanks so much for joining us, man.
Thank you, Sean.
And we'll be back right after this.